Is the law really free? The answer to this question and more on this week's Radio Berkman. So we know that the law is of, by, and for the people of the United States, but that doesn't mean you can read it for free. The court cases and judicial records that interpret laws and statutes fill millions of pages and gigabytes of server space. Serving up all that info and making it searchable is a costly enterprise. But it's getting cheaper. With the costs of server space dropping and the proven willingness of crowds to help manage and curate data for free, you'd think it would also be cheap or free to find court records. And you'd be wrong. In fact, the judicial system's online legal database, called PACER, charges a fee for attorneys, law students, anyone who wants to, just to look at case law. But this information is technically free. Free as in free speech. So anyone is allowed to look at it, copy it, and distribute it as they wish. One new project is seeking to make this information free, free as in free beer. That project is called RECAP, and it came out of the Princeton Center for Information Technology Policy. Steve Schultz is a fellow at the Berkman Center for Internet and Society, a developer for the RECAP project, and a frequent guest on this program. He will soon be leaving Berkman to become the associate director of the Princeton Center for Information Technology Policy, but he joins David Weinberger one last time to explain the RECAP project and the prickly legal line it walks.
PACER is, of course, the federal court's system for distributing the public record. Essentially all proceedings, all judicial proceedings, all opinions, all other documents. It's their way of distributing it to the public. It stands for Public Access to Court Electronic Records. So this is attorney briefings. This is, to some extent, the evidence and orders of the court directly, including the final opinion.
So if I'm a lawyer and I'm trying to find findings for a particular case, I'm likely to go to PACER.
Yes, you're likely to go to PACER, especially if it's for something within the last 20 years or so for which there are electronic records.
The content that you get through PACER is public domain.
That's right.
And so a naive person like me would think that, therefore, access to it is free.
The documents are free in the sense that you're, once you obtain them, for the most part, at liberty to do whatever you want with them. And in fact, the Copyright Act says explicitly that all works of the United States government are in the public domain. And it does so for a reason. The reason is that it benefits democracy when the raw materials of government are accessible, and it hurts democracy if they're not accessible and they're not redistributable.
So what does it cost to retrieve documents, these free documents, that is, ones that are not copyrighted and I'm free to do with them what I want? What does it cost for me to retrieve these documents through PACER?
They charge you based on what they deem to be a per-page rate, whatever that means in the electronic space. And they charge you 8 cents per page. Whether or not that's a page of search results, a page of docket listings, which lists all the documents for a particular case, or a page of those documents on a particular case.
And just to be clear, you're not paying for paper printouts. You're paying for
Paying for search results or screen display of documents. That's right. Now, of course, there are costs associated in running a website and running searches and delivering documents to you over the internet. And that has traditionally been the justification for these user fees. When PACER started, in fact, they had user fees on a per-minute charge. It was a dial-up service, kind of like dial-up AOL or CompuServe back in the day. And as they transitioned it to the web, they decided that it made more sense to charge on a per-page basis.
So along comes RECAP.
Sure. So RECAP is PACER backwards, or as we say, it's turning PACER around. Every decent project needs a terrible pun, and that's ours.
Oh, that's a really good pun.
Well, I give credit to my colleagues at the Princeton Center for Information Technology Policy. Tim Lee and Harlan Yu came up to me after I had given a talk at Princeton where I was talking about what I saw as some problems with the way the fee system works in PACER. And they said, you know what? Someone should really build a Firefox extension that any time someone who's using the extension pays for a document, it automatically uploads it to a public archive. And they said it would be even better if then anytime you were browsing Pacer and it showed you a link to retrieve a document, if the extension would tell you, hey, there's already a free version of this document available, maybe you want to download it from the public archive. So I said, that sounds like a good idea. Why don't you guys go look into it? And a month later, they came back with a prototype that showed that this was very possible to do.
So I use Pacer, and if I have your, if I have that particular add-on added in, it will take, I was just going to recap, so to speak.
Sure.
It's going to take the pages that I retrieve and that I pay for,
right,
Pacer rates, and it moves them into the Internet Archive.
That's right.
Where they're publicly available for anybody for free.
That's right, yes. And the Internet Archive...
No, it's brilliant.
Well, the Internet Archive in this case is the Internet Archive, archive.org, which is a nonprofit online library which has graciously offered to host all of these documents for no fee. And so as you're browsing around Pacer, if you're using Recap, you'll start to get links for these. Our hope is that in the future, others can use this open archive to build better interfaces, perhaps open interfaces to court records to make it even more useful.
The redaction of some of the court records of the various sorts that are available through Pacer and thus through Recap, I understand they may, the redactions may not get every piece of personal information that you would want to keep off of the public internet.
That's right.
Is that the privacy issue?
That's the privacy issue. Obviously, court proceedings can be very both sort of personally sensitive and in some cases commercially sensitive. And there's a balance of some sort that needs to be struck between the keeping court proceedings public, which is essential to well-functioning judiciary and democracy and that sort of thing, and protecting that personal information. Practically speaking, because Pacer is not easily searchable, it's not open to search engines and that sort of thing, it's harder to find. So what we've done is tried to go the extra mile in terms of scanning to the best of our ability for this sort of information. So, for example, sometimes Social Security numbers are left in these documents, and when we receive a document for upload to the public archive from a Recap user, we do a scan through that document to see if anything looks like a Social Security number. If it does, we put it in a quarantine, we have a human look at it and double check. And in reality, we have seen quite a few of those come through. So ultimately, what we'll do is then create a feedback loop back to the courts themselves to say, hey, this came through. You probably want to let the judge know. You probably want to let the attorney know if the attorney made a mistake, so we can improve the privacy practices so those don't necessarily stand in the way of public access.
So one would imagine, I understand there have been some courts weighing in on this,
yep,
and one would imagine that they would be thrilled to have these public domain documents that are so, as you say, essential to democracy, that they be available now. Have those walls taken down and have them be freely available. Undoubtedly, the courts have been thrilled by this. Isn't that the case, Steve?
Well, to varying degrees. There is a policy put forth by the Judicial Conference, which says that in cases where people have free access to Pacer, and these are unique circumstances like people representing indigents, public defenders, sometimes academics, sometimes they can get a fee waiver. They have to get it on a court-by-court basis, but sometimes they can get a fee waiver. If they do, then they are not allowed to redistribute those documents to other people.
That's distressing.
Well,
keeping in mind that these are in the public domain, and they're not just in the public domain, they're important court documents.
Right.
So what's the justification for not allowing...
So in
redistribution of them.
The motivation behind this, as best I can understand, and I'm mind reading the courts here, the motivation seems to be that if just one person were allowed to get free access to the whole archive, and if that one person were to make it freely available, then no one would pay for access anymore.
And that would be terrible because...
Well, because presumably The fees support the operation of the system. And
but you wouldn't need the system because they would be up at, say, Internet Archive, where they would be searchable and people could, as just all the things you're saying, people could write front ends to them. And I'm not following the logic.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, so you have to understand that, and I'm not saying that this is all necessarily completely logically consistent, but you have to understand that the public access system is under the hood the same system that allows attorneys to electronically file court records. It's the same website, basically. Somehow this system, especially the filing side of it, needs to be paid for. Now, the current model is to pay for it using public access fees. The service being provided is attorneys electronically filing, and the charges are public access to those filings. So if the public access fees went away, the revenue stream in order to pay for this electronic filing system would also go away. And what appears to be the case is that the courts have over the years gotten comfortable with this revenue stream coming from public access to court electronic records. They used it to pay for building the electronic comment filing system, and they're now increasingly using it for other information technology costs within the courts. In fact, this year, according to their financial plans, they're planning to spend more public access fees on courtroom technology allotments, so buying evidence presentation systems and the like for courtrooms, than they're using to pay for the PACER system itself. And if you look at their documents, there's a smattering of other things that they're also spending public access fees on.
Have there been other court reactions to this?
Yes. So in addition to their reaction around the fee waiver users, there was another statement which was essentially put out by the administrative office to the courts, which they then presented in their own formats. What that message said was, we have some concerns that RECAP might make available private information, specifically sealed documents and the like. And this is a legitimate thing for them to consider because the same system is used for attorneys that file as for public members of the public that access it through PACER. And if the extension were written in an irresponsible way, it might upload things that you as an attorney are filing that are supposed to be private documents. We, of course, realized that this was a risk early on in development when we were talking to attorneys, and we made sure that when you're logged in under an attorney account, which they call an ECF account, the system completely disables itself. And then in addition to that, the extension is very transparent about what it's doing. So it tells you when it's enabled itself and when it's watching pages. It tells you every time it's uploaded a document. So the idea is that even if something were to go wrong, you at the very least would know, hey, something went wrong. That wasn't supposed to be uploaded. We posted something about that on our blog, and we immediately had someone say, oh my goodness, you're not guaranteeing that nothing will ever go wrong? We said, well, we tested it for months. We think it's great. We think it respects the court security model, but we would just want to let you know, even if there's some kind of a bug.
You know how you handle this? You put a beta in up on the top of the page.
Yeah,
seems to cover everything.
Exactly. So in any event, the court said we were a little bit concerned about the privacy issues. They also said people should know that this is open source software. And because it's open source, it means that anyone can modify it for good or bad purposes. And you should always be careful. That prompted an interesting reaction from the open source community, of course. It was interesting. It brought out a certain flavor of very geek-aware attorneys who emailed us and contacted the administrative office and said, I don't think you get open source. They said the reason that open source is in fact better than closed source is that anyone can look at the code, they can see how it works, If there are errors, they can correct them and they can notify the appropriate people. And in fact, we think it's more secure than a closed system.
So if I were a malefactor and I got my hands on this open source recap software and I wanted to modify it so that it would no longer pay attention to the type of login, right? Because you're stopping lawyer logins from working with those because you don't want to touch the ability to upload. But I'm a malefactor.
Yep.
X hypothesis. How hard would it be for me to flip some bits and have myself?
It would be very easy. Very easy. In fact, you could open a single file. You could delete two or three lines of code, if I'm recalling correctly. And your version of the extension would start uploading things when you're logged in as an attorney.
Then why wasn't the court right to worry about it? And all this naivete about open source.
Well, it's one thing to do that for yourself. It's another thing to persuade unknowing individuals to do that and to install the software and to ignore any warnings to the contrary. Now you could remove the warnings as well. So you would somehow have to convince people to install this thing. We went to great lengths as we designed the system and as we went live to make it very clear who we were. This is a project of Princeton. That's where it's coming from. To run a site on a secure server. So when you go there, you can see, oh, this site is authenticated by Princeton. When you install the software itself is digitally signed by Princeton to tell you that's who it came from. And so we went to great lengths to make sure you know who this is coming from. And we said, you can look at the code to make sure that it's doing what you want it to do. If I were an imposter, I would somehow have to convince people to go to my imposter site. I would have to convince them to install this thing despite security warnings to the contrary. And I would have to get some sort of substantial use out there. Now, theoretically, one could do that. And what Recap would have done in that scenario to enable it would simply have been to initially designed a system that got you 99% of the way there in terms of making the changes. That's the reality. Now, we think it's highly unlikely that someone would be able to persuade people to do this. But it's within the realm of possibility. It's also within the realm of possibility if you design proprietary closed source code. You would just have to start from scratch. We think that ultimately more openness about how the system works and more openness with innovations around court data, the benefits of that certainly overwhelm the low likelihood that someone would be able to do this. But the court is right, in a sense, to say you should be concerned about security around your documents. And they could likewise probably go even further in terms of creating safeguards on privacy issues like retraction of personal information and proper sealing of documents. In fact, that seems to pose a very clear and evident risk versus this sort of hypothetical scenario in which a baddie convinces you to install a nasty extension.
Which would then be exposed because the source is open.
The other safeguard we have in place is that uploads to the Internet Archive don't go directly to the Internet Archive. They go through our server, which is where we scan to make sure they don't have social security numbers and the like. And presumably, we would be able to tell if these documents began coming through. We have various mechanisms in place, in addition to scanning for social security numbers, to see what types of documents are coming in and where they're coming from. And so, in a sense, we are doing a certain amount of security filtering at that stage of the process as well.
So there's an odd parallel, but it's not quite parallel, between PACER and the court records and Westlaw.
Right.
And court records. Westlaw is it's a private company. they are adding metadata to the court records, though.
That's right.
And they've become so embedded, Westlaw has become so embedded in the system that it's now, I'm not a lawyer, but as I understand it, if you want to refer to a court record, you almost inevitably end up using the Westlaw numbering system and filing yes. system. And so even though the material is explicitly public domain yeah. material, they end up with a copyright and a sort of monopoly-like control over the publication of those records because they are the standard way in which the court system refers to those records.
That is exactly right. If you're a lawyer, you essentially need to pay for access to West's version of the law because the court requires you to provide citations to it using their format. That being said, there has been some interesting litigation which has freed it up to some extent so that at the very least the citations can be used by other folks nowadays. So Lexis, who's one of their competitors, can at least provide basic citation information. But certain details like page numbers, as well as various other things that West adds to the cases in terms of description or correction, are maintained as a monopoly by West. And one movement by radical law librarians has been to advocate for an open citation system so that one need not go through West either directly or indirectly by Lexis, that can incorporate their citations, in order to refer to the law. And one of the barriers, to loop this back into the PACER discussion, is that there has not been an open, comprehensive repository of case law so that people could cite to it and say, you'll find it here. If that
using some open citation system.
That's right. So if such a system existed, it would also help promote this open citation system, and it would help promote lower attorneys' fees, essentially.
So building up the public domain repository through RECAP or through some other technique would encourage the growth of the sort of liberation of the metadata that also keeps some of this public domain information within privately held hands.
That's right.
Effectively.
That's right. That's right. And part of what we're doing when we upload these documents to the Internet Archive is not just to upload the documents, but also to upload a machine-readable XML file, which describes the core important pieces of metadata that are part of the case. We actually need to do some improvements there to include even more information, but we wanted to start by presenting it in an open machine-readable format so that we could get started on that process. And actually, since launching, we've been contacted by quite a few different entities, commercial, non-commercial, academic, that have maintained their own PACER repositories of small, medium, large size sets of case law around certain things, and said to us essentially, hey, we think what you're doing is great. We want to find a way to add our stuff to your repository in a standard format and perhaps even find a way to interface with your repository so we can incorporate it into our services as well.
Thank you so much. We will miss you at the center, but we'll count on
thank you, David.
On staying in touch.
I'll be back often.
You can download the RECAP Firefox extension. Just visit www.recapthelaw.org. Steve Schultz is the new Associate Director of the Princeton Center for Information Technology Policy and a developer for the RECAP project. We wish him all the best in New Jersey and hope he'll come back to visit. Radio Berkman is produced by me, Daniel Dennis Jones, at the Berkman Center for Internet and Society at Harvard University in Cambridge.